podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Marima. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah? Are you nice and warm down in Australia right now?
Like, yeah, it is the middle of summer.
Yeah, I'm so jealous.
Crazy world, I know.
Yeah, because where I am, it's been like negative 17. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's like 30 degrees here. I don't know what that is in...
30
like,
degrees
weird...
Celsius?
Yeah, I don't know what that is in...
It's probably roughly about 80 degrees or so.
86.
Yeah, oh, see?
86 degrees right now.
Not bad for me, guessing, huh? Yeah, so
well,
I should
know. It's your ridiculous system.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But yeah, so I'm a little jealous, to say the least, because I have on like 20 layers to sit in my house because it's that cold outside.
Yeah, it's perfect reading in the sun weather.
Oh, see, we read up like under 5 million blankets with lots of hot beverages at this point in time here in
that
New England.
That can be nice too.
Yeah, it's okay. But you know, after about like the third day of like, if you go outside, your face freezes, it kind of gets old. Whereas yeah, I'm sure going down to the beach to read a book doesn't really get that old.
Well, when you live in Australia, kind of, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, tough life down there. All right, so let's start off with what we've been reading, as always, because that's always a great way to kick it off. So what have you been reading? Anything exciting and new?
I've read a couple of things. I read, I'm currently reading, or I just finished reading The Bling Ring by Nancy Jo Sayles, which I do not recommend at all. It's based off the Sofia Coppola film, The Bling Ring, that had Emma Watson in it. And that was based off an article that Sayles wrote for Vanity Fair. And I think this is her first book because it's basically written like a really, really, really long like magazine feature article,
yeah,
which doesn't necessarily lend itself to the format. And she's kind of really judgmental and I don't know, like not in a sort of like intellectually assessing way, just you get the feeling that she really doesn't like these people that she's writing about and like it shows through. And
yeah.
So it's just not the most like pleasant reading experience. So I definitely wouldn't recommend that. Another one I wouldn't recommend is The Improbable Theory of Anna and Zach. I just read this. I believe this is a July release.
Yeah, it's a summer because it's sitting on my shelf. So do tell me why to not read it, please, if I can take it off my pile.
Okay. This is by Brian Catcher, and, you know, well-intentioned, I think. So it's basically about this girl, Anna, and this boy, Zach, and as we always see with these kinds of books, the chapters alternate from their different perspectives. And Anna is like a type A, very proper, like, goody-two-shoes, top-of-her-class kind of person. And Zach is like a slacker, sci-fi guy who plays like Dungeons and Dragons equivalent and goes to like science fiction fantasy conferences, and you know, like opposites attract or whatever, they get stuck together for this weekend and anyway, etc. I think
is
it
this
is
the
intended.
One where she goes to look for her brother,
right? So they go and look for her brother who gets lost at this sci-fi convention.
Convent.
And so Zach has to take her around and they're looking for him together. I think it's meant to be a celebration of like that kind of geeky science fiction fantasy culture. It does not read like that, patronizing at times. And it like even very disparaging of that. Both of them at times like refer to this kind of, you know, it's that idea, it's that stereotype that, like, anyone who's into science fiction and fantasy is, like, a, you know, overweight, middle-aged guy living in their parents' basement. Like, that's really what it's playing into. And it just feels like a cheap shot, you know. I understand what he was trying to do, but he did not do it well. So, for me, that was not a... That's not a read that I would recommend because I don't think the characters, like, redeem it enough for me that... You know, you can not mind that area of it. Like, it's just a kind of a blah book with that's, like, I found fairly insulting. So don't read that.
Nice.
One. Yeah. I mean, look, there will be people who will like this book, and I can totally see people who will like it. But, yeah, I just don't know if he's, like, I'm sure he didn't mean it like that. I don't think that was the intention, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that makes it any better. So, you know, it's like a contemporary kind of geeky dual protagonist love story comedy in a way. So, you know, like there's a huge market for that. Like, we're seeing so many books like this at the moment, and that's fine. But like, for me, it did not stand out in the sea of all of these stories for any reason that is good. So one book, speaking of, that did stand out from a sea of other stories, I just read Red Queen by Victoria Aveyard.
I've just read that as well.
Yeah, and this is a February release, I want to say.
Yes, it is.
And I really, really liked it. I did not think I would, but I picked it up just because I needed to take something, like you're saying, down to the beach. I need to take something to read. And, you know, it does kind of play into a lot of the tropes that we've come to see with, like, a dystopian fiction. But I really, really liked this. I thought it was a very clever premise, the idea of the Reds and the Silvers, who are like these two different groups who, you know, in a general dystopian, like, they would be, you know, the District 13 or District 12 and the Capital. But in this book, like, they actually have different blood, and that gives them different powers and things. And it's kind of like X-Men crossed with, like, classic dystopian fiction. We all know how big a fan of X-Men I am, but I also found it, I don't want to spoil it, but I really, really, really liked the protagonist, and I really liked the ending, because for like the first time I felt like this was not a book that was constructed to be a love story. You know, it wasn't you know, it's a love story, there's a love story aspect to it, but that's not the center focus of the story. And the protagonist is a female, young female, and I really liked that, you know, the love story wasn't the center of her world either. And and she uses that trope that we see all the time of like the love story triangle very cleverly, and sort of dismantles it in a way. So yeah, I really, really liked this. I guess it's going to be a trilogy, so mm-hmm. I mean could this have worked as a single book? I think it could have. Like, it could have just worked as one installment. But everything has to be a trilogy now, so that's fine. And I'll hear what you thought about in a second, but I'll just finish off. The last book that I am still reading, currently reading, is nonfiction called Literary Brooklyn, The Writers of Brooklyn and the Story of American City Life by Evan Hughes. And that is about like the relationship between authors and the neighborhood of Brooklyn. And, you know, it talks about like Walt Whitman and Truman Capote and all of these writers who wrote or found inspiration there. And it's very interesting if you're into like history and literature and maybe a little more into classic fiction. So I haven't got all the way through that yet, but it's really fascinating. It has a little map at the front that shows you like where they all lived and everything. So you could like go and do your own little tour of Brooklyn, which is a shame that I didn't read this before I was there earlier, last year now. But yeah. That's all of mine. So tell me, what did you think of Red Queen? Did you like it?
I do like it. I like it a lot, actually. And we're going to be doing an interview with Victoria. So if you have any questions for her,
perfect.
You send them on over and I'll make sure that they're included. But I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, my question is, how does it end? Tell me the ending.
You're like, I need to know now. I know it's three books, but I need to know now. So, you know, I think it was really interesting. And I liked, because this is one of those books coming into this kind of like winter season of books. It's been talked about a lot. And I think in the past, I've seen books that have been talked about extensively. You get, you know, we get all kinds of media stuff about them. And then when you get to the actual book, the book doesn't exactly live up to everything that's been put before it. I think this book actually does live up to it. And I liked it a lot. So I'm kind of excited for many of the reasons that you said already. So I won't go into it all, but I'm really excited about it.
Do you know what
it.
I mean about the protagonist and like the love story?
Yes,
aspect?
I do.
I think I totally agree with you. It is, I've been seeing a lot of hype for it, and I've been getting a lot of like media things for it. So it's nice when it actually matches up, because oftentimes these types of books, I don't want to generalize, but there are a lot of dystopian romances on the market. And I think what's clever about this one is like it uses those familiar aspects, but in a new way versus like trying to be something totally different. You know, it plays to its strengths.
Right. So I think I'm excited. We'll see. And maybe that'll be our February book because it comes out in February.
Yeah, that could be good. people can let us know if that sounds interesting to them.
Yeah. So I think, because that would be cool, because this month we're doing All the Right Places, so that'll be a kind of contemporary novel. So maybe we'll switch it up and do something a little bit more dystopian-like for that.
Yeah.
We shall see. I also read Seeker by Arwen Ells David. It's set in Scotland, and it's basically a dystopian-esque novel with, like, magic and stuff in it. It's got a lot of things going on in it. And in this one, it's about these three pupils who are working together. It's and they're all training to be seekers. And the idea is that they cross over into a different realm and to fight like evil. And Quinn's father is like the head of the seekers. And there are a lot of questions about her dad. You don't know if he is a good guy, just a really strict teacher, or if he's really truly evil. And it's very questionable throughout the whole book. It is, I would definitely say that it's for older teens. There's a lot of violence. It has almost a Game of Thrones-esque feel to it in some senses.
Big call.
But it does. You know how it's like Game of Thrones has that violence in it that's like,
yeah,
kind of unforgiving and relentless. It's there, and it's like, mm-hmm, pervades everything, and you get the sense that, yep, this was medieval times. Even though this isn't set in medieval times, it's got that same vibe to it. So it's definitely got that aspect going into it. I think it's got a lot of potential. And then the last book, I'm actually listening to it. I'm not reading it. I traveled a lot over the holiday break and stuff, so I like to listen. That way I can still use my time wisely. And I was listening to 1,000 Pieces of You by Claudia Gray. This book came out in the fall, and I just didn't have time to read it. And can I just tell you, it is the coolest book. Yeah, it's really cool.
Because it's been on my shelf like 6 months before it came out. It was there. Yeah, and I still haven't gotten to it.
Exactly. I had a copy, and I just didn't, like, I've been so crazy busy. And so I was like, all right, I had my Audible credits, and I'm like, what am I going to get for my road trip? I'm like, all right, I'm getting this because it just sounds cool. First of all, the narrator is fantastic. This book requires a lot of different voices. Like, you have to do male and female characters. You have to do all these different accents. This female narrator is phenomenal. The accents are so good, and the voices are so good. Like, you would think you were listening to multiple people. So props to the narrator, because I really enjoy listening to her. The story itself is about this girl whose family, her mother and father, are, like, crazy scientists. Her mom is very, she's like a physics professor, but, like, beyond that. Like, they do all these theoretical experiments, and her father is the same, and they're very, like, they're amazing, and they work at a college, so they always have, like, college kids that are interns or working with their parents that are around, and she's a senior in high school. She's always been homeschooled, but she's more artistic, where her family is more scientific, and her mother invents this thing called the Firebird, and what it does is it lets you jump dimensions. So you don't actually time travel, it's dimensional travel. So their idea is that our world is built up with lots of different layers of dimensions, and you can move between the dimensions. Or your consciousness can move between the dimensions where you already exist, kind of thing. So it's a little science heavy, but it's cool. So you don't actually ever cross your own timeline, but you hop into the timeline that already exists where you are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
That does make sense.
Okay, I'm like, wait.
That does make sense. That is not at all what I thought this book was going to be about.
Oh, really?
I have to say, like, don't judge a book based on its cover, like, blah, blah, blah. But, like, based on the cover, on the review book that I received,
right,
I was like, I am not going to like this book. Like, this looks like,
I
don't
know. Is it the city with Russia underneath reflected?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, gorgeous cover. Gorgeous cover. But it's very misleading.
But it doesn't look like a
Dimensional
kind of science-y, like,
right. Well, she
sci-fi
does,
book.
She does end up in Russia for a while. So I think that's why it's probably got that on there. And it's a beautiful cover. But yeah, it's so cool. The next thing we're going to talk about is there is a book that I've read in the past. I don't know if you have you read This Song Will Save Your Life?
Yes, I
by
love
Layla
that
Sales.
Book.
Yeah. So, first of all, let's talk a little bit about how you should get This Song Will Save Your Life on audio, because, A, I think it's fantastic. It's a really cool vibe. I don't know if you've heard the audio for it, but it's really, really cool.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So as a suggestion for our Audible book or audiobook choice, I'm going to say This Song Will Save Your Life by Layla Sales. And you'll understand why I'm saying that when we get to our next news point. But I highly suggest it. So for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. And again, our suggestion is This Song Will Save Your Life. And the reason I'm saying that, are you ready, is because This Song Will Save Your Life was actually just optioned. But it wasn't optioned necessarily for film. It was optioned for stage, which fascinates me.
This is so cool.
It fascinates me because, like, this is, I've never heard of a young adult book being optioned for stage. I can't recall one. And if there is one, by all means, people, let us know, put it in the comments, because I'd be super curious. But I cannot recall, like, a legit, like, novel in the last 10 years that's been YA that's been adopted for the stage.
Yeah, now so, I'm trying to think.
I know.
I'm sure there must be something.
I'm sure, like, there is. Somebody will come up with something and be like, Jen, come on. But no. So it has been optioned by Broadway producer Kevin McCollum and former Glee producer, nobody roll your eyes yet, Michael Novick. And they've optioned the rights to her, The Song Will Save Your Life, for stage and for film. But it's likely that it's going to go to stage. So it was the 2013 novel that followed a bullied girl and her family, who she finds a home among, like, this underground music scene. And so she basically had a failed suicide attempt, and her family's trying to get her all this help, and she kind of finds her place in this underground music scene. So that's kind of, I don't know, I think it's kind of cool. I think it lends itself to the stage, definitely, so I don't know.
Right,
what do you
and
think?
She becomes a DJ.
Yes.
Like, it's the DJ scene.
Yes.
So, are they saying, like, I mean, the guy that's producing it, one of the producers, like, he's the producer of Rent and Avenue Q and In the Heights,
right.
Like, he has cred.
He does have cred on Broadway.
So
that's
which cancels out the Glee person,
right.
Who I had already rolled my eyes.
I know. And I'm like, oh, God, someone's going to see that and be like, no. But I think with McCollum, who has done all these, like, amazing things on Broadway, could definitely take it to a place that would be super cool. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And I've met Layla Sales. She is hysterical. She is, like, so much fun and so funny, and I am so excited for her. Like, this is such a big deal. It's so cool. So, I don't know. And this book is fantastic.
I'm assuming, like, they're talking about making it a musical, not just, like, a play with music
whatever.
I would assume, like, that's what this would imply.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Because of Rent, Avenue Q, In the Heights, Motown, they're all musicals.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that kind of makes sense in a way for this story. And, you know, like, whatever you may think, me included, whatever we may think about Glee, which is that is terrible, I think, like, you know, it's quite clever in a way to have that because they have the balance of, like, the Broadway insight. Like,
right.
This guy's produced a huge amount. And then also, like, the teen perspective.
Exactly. I was going to say someone who understands that perspective.
Yeah, that I actually think... Yeah, I actually think this would work really well as a musical. Now I'm thinking about it because it is slightly heightened in a way, and it does take place in, like, these very specific locations, mm-hmm. like, has this kind of small cast of interesting characters, and obviously, like, music is already part of it, but music is sort of transformative in the story,
exactly.
So that would make sense. This would be so cool. I've just, like, talked myself into this. Someone let me produce it. Like, hire me as well. I have great ideas.
But, yeah, I saw this. I saw that it popped up on one of my alerts. I'm like, no way. This is the coolest thing ever. I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it. So let's hope it goes somewhere fun because I would definitely go see it.
Take, like, years.
I know.
I honestly am surprised that, like, this hasn't been optioned for film prior to this.
I know. She has some other stuff out too that I just love, and I think it would make great, like, really fun, even if it's an ABC Family movie. I know that sounds weird, but they're, like, perfectly suited for that. So, I don't know. She's got some really fun stuff. Her stuff is just funny. Like, you read it and you laugh, so I don't know.
Yeah, this was actually another book that I was put off because of like the cover and just my sort of preconceived whatever. But I remember you used to talk about it a lot.
I did.
and then I saw it one day and I just picked it up. I was like, oh, I'll try it out. And I read it through in like immediately, you know, in a couple hours. And there's a lot more going on in this than you would initially think.
Yeah.
So definitely recommend people check it out. Or they can do the Audible thing, or, you know, they can read it. Either way, I think definitely worth looking into.
Absolutely. The next bit of news, which I think is kind of interesting, is that for the year of 2014, publishing initiatives on Kickstarter, like, thrived. So Kickstarter campaigns for publishing raised nearly $22 million, which I think is kind of interesting. I guess I wouldn't think of Kickstarter as going in and doing, like, a Kickstarter program to get a book made. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, yes, I would agree with that. But, like, I think there's kind of been a trend towards not just publishing, like, a book, but, like, kickstarting publishing companies or imprints or things like that. Like, there was this one, Big Bang Press, that was, I want to say, in 2013 now. And it was kind of this, like, fandomy publisher, like this indie publisher that they was funded by Kickstarter, and now they're publishing three books. One of them's already come out. I don't know, I guess it makes sense. Like, everyone kickstarts everything. Like, didn't some guy kickstart his potato salad or whatever?
Yeah, that's just ridiculous, but
yeah, you know, yeah, whatever.
I don't know. So I thought that was kind of really interesting that it's not just movies like Veronica Mars that can get kickstarted. There's lots of different publishing opportunities and stuff out there. Like, I just pulled it up just to see what there is, and there are some really unique, I guess, some interesting book options. Like, I'm looking at different picture books. I'm looking at, like, all kinds of weird things. So I guess that's cool. I guess I didn't realize that it was such a big thing on Kickstarter.
Well, it makes sense because I think there's definitely been this push, you know, there is always the argument that, like, publishing is a dying industry and, you know, books are declining and, like, decreasing in quality and numbers and et cetera, et cetera. So in a way, like, to cut out the middleman and just be like, I'm just going to kickstart, like, this specific book. Whether it's done independently by someone who couldn't afford to do it otherwise, or if it's done, you know, by a publisher or someone, you're bringing, like, the specific title to people. You're going to ensure that these people buy it. So in a way, it sort of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I guess, like, the same with anything. I kind of wonder, like, why they haven't done more of it before, because, like, there's been some, but I don't think there hasn't been any, like, huge campaigns that I can recall for, like, specific books.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing I'm just noticing is they're doing, like, teen author festivals are, like, also on here being funded. Yeah. So I guess it's kind of cool.
I feel like that's a better idea.
Yeah, no, I think that's really cool. So, like, I was just, like, flipping through some things, because I guess, like I said, it's not something I would necessarily think about. And then I guess there's an entirely different division for, like, comic books. It's not included in, like, there are two branches of publishing. There's one publishing branch that includes, like, all kinds of books and literary journals and that sort of thing. And then there's a whole separate branch for comic books. So it's kind of cool.
That's weird. Why split them up, guys? Don't segregate. Just love everyone.
Written word is the written word, man.
I mean, comic books also have words in them.
Most of the time. Yeah, so I don't know. What do you want? Maybe they get more comic book proposals or Kickstarters, so that's why they want it's a separate thing to, like, manage it.
That's true.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. Because I could see that definitely being a huge Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah. I don't know. I, like, I'm sort of sus to, like, self-publishing, indie publishing in a way anyway, only because, like, and this is just, you know, my own experience, but I have read many self-published books that probably should not have been published and would not have been published except that person like paid for the printing and did everything, and like that's fine, you know, whatever. But you sort of don't have that quality control in a way,
right?
With someone doing it themselves. Like if something's coming through a publishing house, you can say, well, it might not be my taste or whatever, but like it's probably not going to have a huge amount of spelling mistakes and unfinished sentences and like things like that. And I know this is like a huge generalization, and I'm sure that there are a lot of self-published books that are of a very high quality. I just happen to have read a few that have not been. And so I guess that's like kind of the one downside too, if people are kickstarting like their own projects.
See, I've read a lot of self-published, or they call them indie-published books, from authors who go through publishing houses for certain types of books and then independently publish different books. Because they're going to make more money independently publishing them than if they go through a publishing house for them. So
yeah.
I know a lot of the ones that I've read have actually been really good. So, but I have come across some like you where like, you're like, can I please like get a red pen as I read this? Because, oh my God.
You're like, can I buy a vowel?
You're like, can I get Karen to read this first so she can fix it and then I can read it?
Yeah, basically. I don't know. It's a cool idea. Like, I like the idea that people can just be like, well, like, I'm going to see if there's a market for this. And if it is, like, I'm going to bypass the middleman and, like, just do it.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. So we'll see. Another interesting fun factoid is that Mark Zuckerberg, the lovely man who started Facebook, has decided that he needs to have a book club. Because, well, why not?
He's a new Oprah.
Yeah. Yes. So evidently for part of his New Year's resolution, Mark Zuckerberg challenged himself to read a book every 2 weeks, or read a new book every 2 weeks. I'm like, really? That every 2 weeks, one book? You can like push that a little bit further.
Well, I guess he does run like the biggest company in the world or whatever it is. I don't know.
I don't know.
Did I tell you the story of I went to Facebook when I was in the States and I saw Mark Zuckerberg there?
No, you did not.
Well, that's the story. I just
awesome.
Told you.
Fantastic. Yep. Love it.
That happened.
So I think it's kind of interesting that he's kind of launching this book club. His first pick is Moses Naim's The End of Power.
Didn't this sell out like immediately?
Probably.
When he announced it, I feel like it did.
Like you said, he is the new Oprah.
Yeah, well, maybe.
We shall see. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So we may have to keep an eye on Mr. Zuckerberg and his book choices, because I'm kind of curious, what does a bajillionaire like to read in his free time?
Well, I just, like, I'm imagining it's going to be all business.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Or, like, nonfiction and...
Right. But then it would really amuse me if it was, like, you know, all of these business, like, how to get ahead, like, self-motivated books. Then just, like, at one point it's just like, oh, the fault now starts. And then it just goes back to being, like, all these business books.
That would be amazing. So...
I don't know why that amuses me so much, but it does.
There's something very amusing about it, not going to lie. So we will keep an eye on that, because I'm super curious to see what Mark Zuckerberg is going to read in his free time. And the last thing we're going to talk about on this episode, which is my favorite topic ever, as you guys all know, the New York Times bestsellers list, because why not? We haven't done it in a while, and I'm feeling like we should, you know, discuss it. So first things first, in the adult section of the list, in the ebook and print section, it's basically being dominated right now by anything that is been adapted into a film. So in the fiction section, we have Gone Girl high up on all of the lists, whether it be mass market paperback or the combined lists, and rightfully so. Gone Girl is a pretty sweet book. If you haven't read it, definitely check it out. And then see the movie, because, oh my God.
Also great.
So good. Then on the nonfiction list, you have Wild, which is the Cheryl Strayed story, which Reese Witherspoon is starring in. American Sniper, which is featuring Bradley Cooper. And Unbroken, which is the movie that was just directed by Angelina Jolie. So, and those are all nonfiction because they're all about very specific people's lives and experiences. So, that kind of rounds out the adult section. Lots of stuff heading into award season, which starts tonight with the Golden Globes. We see this, like, often. The adapted books always kind of fly up the list anytime there's a movie coming out.
Yeah.
It's normal. It happens. And all of these movies, bar Gone Girl, which came out in November, the other three have only just released right around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Bradley Cooper is getting a whole lot of buzz for his role in American Sniper. And that man's, I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now. The character he plays, the man he's representing, but his story is really, really fascinating. He was a sniper in Afghanistan, and he was on like three different tours of duty, came back home, was raising his family, and spoiler alert, if you don't want to know, mute me for about 5 seconds. He was actually killed here stateside by one of his army friends. They kind of just snapped and he shot him and another man that was at a gun range with them. So it's kind of a sad story too, but anyway, that's been on the news a lot here lately because Bradley Cooper is sweeping the nation on every talk show known to man at this point in time, which is not a bad thing. I don't mind seeing Bradley Cooper on TV. All right, moving right along into my favorite category, the young adult category. Interestingly, John Green does not take the top two spots on the YA list, which has not been the case for months and months on end, but Gail Forman is in spot number one and number two for If I Stay, followed by Where She Went. Again,
that
movie adaptation.
That is very strange to me.
Right. Well, there's like zero things that are actually new on this list. There's one, I think Girl Online is fairly new, and Asylum, which is in the top 15, not in the actual top 10. Those are actually newer books. Every other book that is on this list has been out for years.
Yeah, Girl Online was only released at the end of last year. It was like a November release.
Yeah, so that one's fairly new.
But that also was like the biggest selling debut book of all time or something. So,
really? Wow.
Yeah, at least in the UK, I know.
Okay.
Because she's a YouTuber and she has a built-in audience, so
understandable. Oh, that makes sense. Yep, that helps her. But that's the only one in the top 10 that's new. All the other books have literally been out for years.
Yeah,
because while Gail Forman is one and two, everything else ever written by John Green fills the rest of the list until you run out of books. And then, of course, you have Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, because what's the New York Times bestselling list without it? And that book is, like, literally 3 to 4 years old. Like, I don't understand.
Well, that also has some film buzz attached, though.
A little bit, but at the same time, when you have these new books that are coming out, that are, like, bigger books and selling really well, how do they not make the list? Over a book that, while yes, it may have, but how can it sell something that much more than a book that's
because
just launching?
New York Times bestseller list is, like, written by someone's grandma in their, like, retirement home or something. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I know.
It's never made any
but
sense.
But it really hurt, like, I get so frustrated by it.
It's pulled off the weirdest numbers.
I know.
You know, they, like, split it all up just because at one time, like, Harry Potter was all over the whole list, and they were like, oh, better have, like, a kids list for, like, you know,
right,
fiction,
then,
and then,
like,
nonfiction, then, like, young readers, and then other readers, and
well,
paperback and hardback, and, like,
they only
all
just,
of their weird lists.
They only just broke up the young adult and the middle grade books. Those were not separated before. It was either picture books or young adults, so they did one more and split it again. But I think what bothers me most is that you have these new authors who come out, and their books are selling phenomenally, and they can't get on the list to say, like, no matter how well they sell. So it's really odd. What's really interesting is These Broken Stars by Amy Kaufman and Megan Spooner. It came out last December or January, right around this time, because we did it as one of our books. Our review books, it only just hit the list this week.
I wonder if that's because the sequel just came out.
The sequel came out in the middle of December. December 9th,
yeah.
I think it came out. But right, so I'm just fascinated that it made the list. Because it's the first book that made the list, not the second.
No, I know, but you know what I mean? Like,
no,
sales
so, yeah.
from the second push sales to the first.
Right.
Because people need to read it. Like, they see the second one, they
right.
see Felicity,
so,
and then they, you know.
I just think it's fascinating that timing. A year later it made the list, so.
Honestly, I have to say, like, I don't read the New York Times bestseller list. It makes little to...
I know.
No, not even little. It makes no impact on my life, like, whatsoever. And I don't know anyone now, really. Like, I think, in a way, the New York Times bestseller list, like, yes, you know, there are still some bookstores who, like, construct features in their stores what's on the list, or like things like that does happen to some extent, definitely more in the States than here, because no one cares. But I think it has lost this sort of I don't know, it used to be this like illustrious, amazing achievement. And I'm not saying that like an author would not be super pleased to be on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm sure it still feels like amazing, but I don't think it has the impact that it used to have.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, I totally agree. And I just thought it'd be interesting to take a peek, because I feel like for a while...
Yeah, it's good to check in every so often.
Yeah, like, I feel like quarterly we should check in to see if John Green's still hanging around or not.
Yeah.
You know, as you do. And then the last YA book that was new that made the list was Asylum by Madeline Rue. So check it out, see what you guys think, because I always, like I said, I always find it interesting, and I always find it really frustrating at the same time for a lot of different reasons, but... And then in the series list, which is typically, like, for a decade, I think it was run by Harry Potter and Twilight, is led right now by The Maze Runner. So I think that's kind of cool that The Maze Runner is kind of probably getting a lot of support from the film. Because that just came out on DVD, so I think it did, or it's going to. Soon.
Yeah, and a lot of media stuff kind of hype around the second film as well, because they're filming that now, I want to say.
They were filming it. They might be done.
They may have just finished.
So I think
we'll ask Karen next time.
Yeah. Karen is actually at at the Wizarding World convention right now in New Orleans, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she's hanging out doing lots of fangirly things, and we're hosting a podcast as we do. So I hope she's having a good time, and maybe next time she's on, she'll fill us in all about that good stuff. So The Maze Runner is rocking on the list, followed by Divergent, who is probably also getting another big push because Insurgent is, you know, starting to get some media hype for the film release. And then, of course, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Heroes of Olympus, and The Hunger Games round out the top five for the series list. So that none of those, I don't think, are surprised. I mean, The Hunger Games being so high, I think it probably got a huge boost from Mockingjay Part 1 coming back out. Because, I mean, for that series has been complete for almost 2 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah, but it takes so long for a big series like that to drop off. So
yeah, I know.
I would not have been surprised if it had already been in that spot before Mockingjay. But, you know, it may have bumped up a couple places.
Yeah, it was probably definitely on the list. I just don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Whereabouts it was hanging out. So, yeah, so again, just some interesting things about the bestseller list. I always like to check in every now and then. So I think that pretty much wraps up this episode of Book Hype. Again, you guys, we are doing All the Right Places by Jennifer Nevin. I think that's how you say her last name. And that episode will be the January 27th episode. And that will be our review episode. So if you guys want to read it and send us in some questions or some talking points, definitely do that, because I think it'll be a lot of fun. And this book is really interesting, to say the least. I think a lot of you will actually like reading it. It's got you've read it already, right, Marima?
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it, but it's very realistic.
I know, that's why I'm like, I don't wanna, but yeah. So definitely pick that up.
Speaking of like those dual protagonist books, but this is one that's done very well. It's very interesting. It's not as I was taught to believe by the promotional material that it was about post-it notes. It is not about post-it notes. I will reveal that spoiler.
And see, here's another thing. Marima's just brought up a topic of our next episode, which is going to be about book promotion and marketing and stuff, and some of the things that we see and stuff like that, because I think we see a lot of really interesting things, or in your case, misleading things.
I mean, it got my attention, so it worked, didn't it?
It did. So if you guys have any thoughts or comments about that, definitely send those in as well, because it'll be interesting to see what you guys see or think and feel about book promotion and stuff like that, because it's done in such new, unique ways sometimes, or sometimes it's not done at all. It just depends on the book and the publishing house. So we shall see. All right. So until next time, I'm Jen.
And I'm Marama.
Bye, guys.